You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. I'll be joined shortly by co-host Dennis Wissman. We're thrilled today because we're recording our 100th episode of the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. And we've decided to do something different. We've invited three of our prior guests to join us today for an open conversation about retirement, life in general, and aging. They each bring a wealth of personal experience, but they also bring the perspectives of many retirees that they interviewed and profiled for various books and film projects. So you'll get some wide-ranging perspectives and views on these issues from them. We have Melissa Davey joining us. Melissa is a documentary filmmaker who created the film Beyond 60 in her second act following her corporate career. Beyond 60 is available on a number of streaming and TV platforms that you'll find links to in our show notes. Also joining us is Richard Haydeck. He's a former life sciences executive and the author of the book Shifting Gears. 50 Baby Boomers Share Their Meaningful Journeys in Retirement, now available as an audiobook. You'll find a link to that in the show notes as well. And last, but certainly not least, is Dr. Thelma Reese. She's a retired professor of English and of education, and as you'll see in her bio in the show notes, along with Melissa and Richards, they have really done a lot in their second, third, fourth acts. In Thelma's case, that includes co-authoring three books. She co-wrote The New Senior Woman and The New Senior Man with Barbara Fleischer. And in 2020, she co-authored with BJ Kittredge How Seniors Are Saving the World, Retirement Activism to the Rescue. We welcome all three of our guests to this discussion. We expect it to be a lively one today. And we'd like to kick it off with our first question to Thelma Reese. That's in honor of Thelma being our first actual external guest on the podcast almost 4 years ago. And with that, how are today's retirees different from earlier generations? And what's their biggest challenge?
I think it's a very different time to retire than it's ever been before. And the biggest challenge is keeping up with the pace of change. Retirement used to mean something that was fairly circumscribed. We had a definition for it. I don't think we have one anymore because people are leaving one kind of career at one time or later. They may go through so many in a lifetime of work, but the pace of change is accelerating so rapidly that I think this is a very new world that any retiree is coming into. And that's the big adjustment, keeping up with it. And also, perhaps for many people, feeling they have an undefined role in it. So you're finding what it is that you want to do, can do, and helps you grow as a person as you enter any stage of leaving work. I kind of hate the word retirement, but I'll pass this on to the next person.
Nick, how about you?
I think it's interesting. I have focused a little bit on the boomer generation. And of course, we're all proud of being part of all of the activism, all of the things that we accomplish socially and women's rights and gay rights and civil rights and war protesting and all that. The question for the boomer generation is, are they going to keep that same level of activism and do remarkable things in retirement? Or have they earned the right to just kind of kick back and relax? And I think the challenge is, having the freedom of choice, deciding which bucket you want to be in or how you want to blend your activities between kind of being an activist, socially impactful person and being someone who's enjoying their retirement through primarily relaxation.
Melissa, what are your thoughts?
One of the major challenges, I think, with the boomer generation is that we're living longer than the other generations. We're living a lot longer. So if you leave work at the traditional age of mid-60s, you could be living well into your 90s or 100. And that is very different from generations ago. So I think the planning for that has changed. And I think it's very challenging, not just from a financial perspective, but medical, et cetera. Healthcare costs are more expensive. So it does come down to looking at your future as potentially being a lot longer than our grandparents when they left work and then possibly passed away within the next 5 to 10 years. That is changing substantially. So it is a challenge and something that people who are still in work today really need to look at. But also a very positive thing when you are a boomer, which we all are, is that we grew up in work with the technology that exists today. We've grown up in this technological world, giving us this great understanding of how to use technology to our benefit. So retirement, and I too, Thelma, hate that word, when we do move on to the next thing, and that next thing could last 30, 40 more years, we have the skills that the younger generation has. So it's kind of, we're an interesting group of people in that we did grow up in this time at work where we gained all kinds of insights and ability to create and continue to create because we are not a group of individuals that don't know how to use a computer, for instance. So that's a positive of the boomer generation having all of these years ahead of us. We can be creative and we can do other things.
Thelma, Dick mentioned activism, and I think that's something you know a little bit about. I was wondering if you had any comments about activism in retirement.
Well, I also want to respond to something that Melissa just said that really reached me. When those people, first of all, I alone among this group, I guess I'm not a boomer since I'm 88. I'm beyond boomer. I'm BB generation, beyond boomer. And when those people retired that you spoke of, they also largely became invisible. So that when the boomers, with their wonderful skills and knowledge of technology, and not having to learn it all, as I had to learn some of it, they're visible. You're all visible. And you're going to be more visible, which is very exciting because you're going to go beyond these years with many more working, active, and activist contemporaries. I think that's so exciting. It's such a great time to be getting older because you're part of a whole cadre of people who have not only made some differences, but understand what it takes to do it and bring that experience. Very exciting time. And Joe, you asked me something else. My last book with B.J. Kittredge was How Seniors Are Saving the World. And it's about activists that we found who went from barely 60 to 95. So the activism, I think, is so important to look at what people do, why they do it, and how the people listening to this will find their own ways of doing things and their own causes and what makes us find a particular cause and how we maintain the intellectual and I guess social curiosity that keeps us moving and growing as we age.
And I want to mention, because you're the only non-boomer in this conversation. Please feel free to say, okay, boomer, to any of us at any time, if there's anything you don't agree with.
Well, Joe and I were involved in an intergenerational, wonderful experience this past several months. And I was able, as the professor would talk about all these studies of people who were aging, I was able to jump in and say, you're not talking about me, because all these studies go up to people who are 80 at most. These psychological studies, that's changing, but it hasn't really reached the widest audience yet. But the fact that somebody is 88 in the class, that made a difference, because I could jump in and say, remember, students, they're not talking about me.
You were your own data set. Melissa, next question's for you. Tell us about one of the people you profiled in your film whose story inspires you.
Well, all of the women inspired me in one way or another, but I will choose one, and it's not a favorite. She's not a favorite, but they're all favorites. And it's Paula Yankauskas in Hyde Park, Vermont. And she's in her late 60s. And she is a veterinarian. And she went to vet school, you know, medical school, when there weren't that many women in the program. And she tells a wonderful story about how she went off on her first visit to a farm way up in northern Vermont. And when the farmer came out to the truck and saw her, he said, oh, no, you're not coming in here. You're not going to come in my farm. You know, go home. And so she said, you mean you're going to let the cow die? And he said, yes, rather than have you work on my cow. So the way she handled it was just with such ease. And she's a very humble and unassuming woman. And it was the way she told the story that was so unbelievable when you think about, okay, that wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long ago where a male farmer didn't want a female doctor working on the cow. But the better part of her story comes a little bit later when she realized that she wanted to challenge herself to swim across something that would be very difficult. And she had become a little bit of a long distance swimmer in Vermont year-round, going across Lake Champlain and whatnot, which to me, I can't believe it. She talks about it like, well, you know, it's only like 8 or 9 miles and you go and then you come back. And so listening to her story, she decided she was going to train to try to swim the English Channel in her 60s. And she made the decision to do it. And she went to her husband and she told him she was going to make this swim. And he looked at her and he said, hey, Paula, that window has closed. And she said, what do you mean? And he said, well, you're too old. So the rest of the story is she did it. And she was at the time the oldest U.S. woman to swim successfully the English Channel. So if you knew Paula like I know Paula, one of the first things she said to me when I asked her if she would be a part of the film and tell her story was, you really think people would be interested in my story? So inspiring all around. And I think of her all the time.
And Dick, you interviewed a number of people, so many people for your book. Which one would you highlight that really inspires you today?
Like Melissa, I can't play favorites. All of them were great, but there was one that really does stand out as unusual in the dedication of the people. Several of the people in the book found meaning through volunteering in their retirement years. And Bruce and Jill had had a good life, and they said they wanted to do something unique in their volunteering, something that most people would avoid doing. And they looked at volunteering as you go to volunteer and you feel good about it every day that you volunteer. And they said a lot of people want to do that kind of volunteering. What they wanted to do was something that was more difficult than that, that most people would not be willing to do. So they signed up to teach anger management in a maximum security prison. So these two people in their 70s go into, and she, Jill is a tiny petite little woman, and they go in and meet with prisoners who are rapists, who are murderers, who are the very toughest of the tough. And they use Buddhist meditation principles to teach anger management. And what they said is unique about it is not the rewards to them. They said most days they get shut out. The person says, I don't want to talk to you about this. I don't want to hear this. I'm angry. And they said, you know what? Let's talk about it again next week. And they come back the next week and they just keep chipping away. And then every once in a while, they have a breakthrough. And I can't imagine how tough that is to get rejection from someone you're trying to help who really needs it. But the two of them have hung in there. They've been doing this for 17 years, once a week. That's inspiring to me.
And Thelma, I know it's even tougher when you've co-authored three books, but what's one story you'd pick up on?
The youngest person in the How Seniors Are Saving the World is a woman named Rose Tompkins. She was barely 60 when I met her, and she is a Native American. And she had a little notoriety when people were protesting at Standing Rock, protesting the pipeline. She went there as a Native American activist. She has no money. She has, I mean, we're talking about no money. She has a family. She is diabetic. And she noticed that at night, she knew that she had to have her breakfast, lunch, and dinner at certain times for her own health because of the diabetes. So she would be finished dinner by 7. And she would notice that old people, older, much older people, didn't get their dinners until about 9. And many of them were really hungry by then, and they weren't used to having to go to sleep so late. So she started cooking for them on her own and bringing them food. Well, this evolved into something when people noticed and someone provided an actual kitchen that she ran and famously fed people. And it's a beautiful story. But one of the things about her having found a need, just went ahead and filled it and did it selflessly and without any thought of herself, just what can I do to help these people, was that when I got to know her well and know her history, I found out things that I think may even surprise you on the panel and you who are listening. Rose was only about 60. This is just a couple of years ago. The book is new. She was a child who was taken at the age of 6 out of her home in California and sent to a home by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. I didn't know that was still going on. I didn't think about it going on in my own lifetime. She was sent to a place where she was often beaten. The story is dramatic. Her father did rescue her and siblings, but they were also placed again, and they had to be placed in homes that were considered Christian and only English speaking. We were still doing that to Native American children. When my kids were going to regular school and college, I couldn't believe it. So when we look at other people's lives, it does tell us an awful lot about ourselves and our history at the same time. And I think she's so special. She has continued all her activism, her devotion to all the Native American mores, all the customs that she follows. And she continues to inspire me.
It's three wonderful stories. And I couldn't help but think about this as you were all talking about this. You've had the benefit of interviewing so many people as part of your works and telling their stories. And I wondered, how has that experience of doing that for the three of you helped you understand yourself better and the impact it's had on your retirement life. Anybody want to go first?
Dennis, maybe I could jump in here. We just moved locations. We'd been living in a house for 18 years. And one of my buddies said to me, Dick, would you have moved if you had not written the book? And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, you saw so many people doing so many bold things. Did that give you courage? And my response was, I've never thought of that, but I actually think you're right. I think seeing all the things that people are doing, we said, well, we've always wanted to live near the ocean. We've always wanted to live in a different kind of a community. Let's just do it. And I actually do believe at this point, had I not written the book and heard these 75 interviews, I don't think we would have done this. And it's turned out to be a delightful choice in our life and a completely different lifestyle.
Thelma?
Yeah, that's a great question because, like Dick, meeting all these people, each one teaches you something. Each life teaches you something new. And when it teaches you something new, it leads you to the kind of reflection that we're going to still call it retirement because that's the name of the show. But this period of life that we're addressing today provides for you. And it's this time. And I think the older you get, the more, if you're fortunate and you still are sentient, you're able to reflect more and more, and that makes you grow more and more. It's when you stop growing that everything is over. It doesn't matter. As long as you're growing and you're seeing life and seeing what other people live through, it gives you a whole different perspective on yourself and your own life and what's worth complaining about and what's worth looking at and thinking, maybe I can fix this a little. Yeah. And myself, when you're fixing something else, you're really fixing yourself too.
It emphasizes the importance of these connections with people. Melissa?
Yeah, I echo what Thelma just said. And in my attempt to find the women for Beyond 60, I talked with almost 80 women before I picked the 9 to do the long interviews. And I would tell you that every interaction and every conversation that I had, I was aware that I was challenging myself as to how I felt about their story or how I felt about the experience that they were having. And with that comes growth. So every time you listen, the listening part of to someone's story and then bringing that back to your own life and how you've lived your life, it challenges you in a way that affords you to grow. And that's what Thelma was saying. I totally agree with that. And this experience, and maybe because I did it in my retirement period of my life, which I hate that word, I feel like I've grown more in the last 5 years than throughout my entire life. And it was through these conversations and through these times where I allowed myself to really sit with myself and challenge how I thought about anything.
Thanks for sharing all that, Dick.
And just one other thought. I really felt it was a privilege to interview such a range of interesting people. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if these people could meet each other? They're from all over the country, all different kinds of things. Anyway, at the end of August, we're having a book reunion party. And we've invited all the interviewees to come to California. One guy's coming all the way from Miami because he wants to meet the people that are also in the book. And it looks like we're going to have a huge turnout here, far bigger than we ever imagined. And that privilege that I got, I'm now going to share it with the others. And some of the people are saying, I can't wait to meet some of these people. And is this person coming? Is this person coming? So that I think that'll be fun.
That's great. I hope you'll post some photos. I'm sure you will. It'd be great to see. Many people listening now are still in their full-time working years. What should they know about life in a period of life we still call retirement that they might not know? And let me turn that to you, Dick, first.
Okay. I think this may be obvious, but maybe more obvious in retrospect, and that is ease into retirement. Do some things while you're still working to put your toe in the water and find out what's going to work and be willing to do some trial and error. Try some things that you're not sure if you're going to like, or not sure they're going to give you purpose, or not sure they're going to be sources of joy. And if they don't work, move on and do something else. But don't wait until the day you retire to start experimenting. Those who I interviewed who started with an abrupt start had a really tough first year of transition. Those who eased in and had tried some stuff before had a remarkably better experience.
Thelma, how about you?
I think that makes a great deal of sense. If you can start broadening your interests, and I think realize that one of the important things that's going to help you in whatever you decide you're going to do is making sure you don't put yourself into a bubble with other people who have just retired. Make sure that you lead an intergenerational life as much as you possibly can. I think that it's stimulating. It will keep you informed about what's going on from the very young people. You're still going to learn stuff from the very old people. And the more your life is not circumscribed just by your age cohort, the more interesting it will be and the more opportunities you're going to find for things that you really want to focus on and be active in. I think it's very stimulating. I just read a great quote from somebody very young who sold it to a t-shirt company. It says, "Don't believe everything you think." I thought, wow, what a good thing to think about. Don't believe everything you think. And it's coming from somebody around, I don't know, in their 20s or his. That's wisdom. So you're going to find it all over the place. And I think that if you stay in this one generational bubble, you miss an awful lot. I think you start to stultify.
Melissa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with Dick and Thelma, and especially on the intergenerational piece. I have found that to be extremely beneficial myself. In me, now 70, working with people who are 25 and 35, it brings so much more life to the table in how you look at anything and how you, and people really need to think about that before they retire. I agree with you, Thelma, not to say, okay, I'm 65 and I'm moving into the retirement home. That's my one of my biggest fears in life, is that somebody would make me do that, and I have no plans to do it. I'm sure it works for some people. But you need a plan, and Dick was talking about that. You shouldn't just jump off from work with no plan and just go home and sit down, especially if you've had a career where you have been on a train for a long time, busy every day with your thoughts always consumed with work. You can't sit down. I find that most people have great difficulty with that. So for me, it was spending almost a year prior to me actually walking out the door, doing an inventory of all the things that I was interested in and trying to figure out what are the things that I really wanted to do that make sense. And keep, you know, the list was big. And then I got the list down to a few things. And then it just became clear to me, why wouldn't I do this? So I think the message is that there's so many opportunities related to the experiences that you've had in life that you may not think are options. But if you sit down and walk through it, you should do that and have a plan before you walk out the door.
Just to follow on that, be curious as your thoughts with your experiences and talking to the people, that where does work fit into retirement? And work can take different forms and everything, but I'm curious as to what your perspectives are on that.
I have heard myself say it anyway, out loud, where I'm like, oh, I have to do work today. I'm working. And people are like, well, what do you mean? You're not at work anymore. You're retired. And I was like, I'm working. I'm marketing my film. I'm researching next projects. I'm interviewing people. for the next film. That is work. It's a shift. So it may not be in the traditional sense of work when I was in the corporate world and I received a paycheck. So maybe I'm not receiving a paycheck anymore, but I'm still working on something that will bring that in the future. So I think the whole definition of work and retirement is so blurred now, because we do find things to fill our days and projects that become our work. It's a transition. I see it as a transitional piece. And there are many people in retirement that will also go do consulting or part-time jobs, and you know, they're still working. I think we have a hard time drawing that line of the definition of work in retirement. So I think all of us are still working. The three of us who have retired are still working.
There are five of us.
the five of you. I totally agree with that, Melissa. That what we call work has to be redefined, maybe for a lot of people. And maybe it is often what you do that feels productive in some way, that isn't just for your own amusement. I know that years ago, when I had the opportunity for a sabbatical, when I was teaching, the first time I had a sabbatical, I couldn't accept the idea of just going somewhere to play. And so I found a program where I could go somewhere to work. So that's what I did. And that's when I went to Tonga to save the giant clam, about which I had no personal feelings. But it was the idea that obviously, the giant clam needed saving. So I could try, and I knew I would feel good about really being occupied with something that was so foreign to my own life that it would have to be interesting just because it was so brand new and different, and I'd be in the water. And I did it again. I did it on a few of these things where I went to Turkey and unearthed some stuff. But the idea of just not being a tourist was so appealing to me, because the addition of work to being someplace made it very meaningful to me. Many people are really happy, and I have had happy times being a tourist, but not nearly as happy as when I was someplace foreign and working on something.
Dick?
Yeah, I think working is on the menu of choices. But I think for most people, as both Thelma and Melissa were talking about, it's a redefined working. It's the kind of working that fits with this stage of life. One of my favorite stories is a guy who said, "I'm going to work in retirement, but what I really enjoy is telling jokes." And I said, "Oh, how do you do that in retirement? You're going to go on the stage as a comedian?" He says, "No, I'm going to drive Uber. I've got a captive audience." He said, "I start telling the joke. They can't get out of the car until I finish the joke." And then he said, "And I drop them off and I get the next person and I tell an improved version of the same joke. By the end of the day, I've got it down pat." But he said, "I love telling stories and I get to do it all day, whatever days I choose to work." So Uber for him is perfect. And is that working? Well, he gets paid, but he's just having a ball.
Creative. That's very creative. He's just the book is all material. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for all that.
So as a trained listener, I've picked up subtle cues that the word retirement doesn't capture this phase of life very well in your opinions. What should we call it instead?
For me, I call it the detour, which you won't be surprised at that, I'm sure. It's just a detour. That's all. I don't think there's a good word. I hate the word retirement because it reminds me of 1950, where somebody gets a gold watch and they go home and sit down and probably get a little bit depressed because they don't have a plan. For me, this is just a great opportunity. So this is like the big opportunity to take the detour and try all of the things that you didn't do while you were working.
Well, I have to say that I do associate it somehow with age. And the word that I've tried to promote and hasn't gone anywhere is seniority, because it implies that you've actually reached something worthy of a little respect. And everybody knows that even when you were in elementary school or high school, certainly by high school, the senior was somebody you looked up to a little bit because they had already done that. And that went on through your life. So I like the idea of reaching seniority. And that implies that maybe you know something and you've reached an older age. I don't mind being called old. In fact, I really kind of like it now. And as Joe knows, I like to say I've done the aging well part. Now I'm finished with that. I've aged. I'm here. I've arrived. So for everybody else who's aging well, keep it up.
I would say this word retirement is awful. I'm glad Thelma and Melissa had some thoughts on that. I really don't have a better word. And I've had this conversation with others, and some people throw something out, but nothing has stuck. Some people have said, here's a word to describe it, and nothing has really stuck. The closest I could come is rejuvenation, but even that doesn't, I don't like that very much either.
The one I like is coined by Helen Dennis, and it's called Renewment. She has a book, Project Renewment, and with circles all across the country, starting in Southern California. But that one I thought really had a good ring to it.
I think of it as a collage. I can't get it out of my head. Every time I think of collages, I think of the word retirement, because one of the things that I've certainly observed from a lot of the things that you all have brought here, it's different for everybody. So tough word to replace because it's branded. It's got so many different brands associated with it, as we know historically. But I just think of so many different words that go into it. Freedom, choices, things we talk today. Detour belongs there. It may be a sign with detour, seniority, and that's it. And then we create this collage. So it's a beautiful time, and that's what pops in my head.
So last question. Dick, I'm coming to you first on this one. What are the key ingredients of a life well-lived that are often overlooked?
It's been mentioned before already today, but I think the word freedom encapsulates a lot. You can do what's right for you without worrying about failing. There's no such thing as failing in this trial and error of this stage of life. So do the thing that you've always wanted to do, and recognize that you've earned it. You get to do that. That's what this stage of life that you're entitled to do. And that may be something that is socially impactful, or it might just be something that's joyful, like learning to play the ukulele. You've got the freedom to see what works for you. And it's so overlooked because people say, well, I'm going to kind of do this and it's kind of that. And the boldness of their ideas to do something where their kids and their friends say, are you crazy? Are you really going to do that? You got the freedom to do that kind of stuff.
That's a wonderful thought. I think that feeling that a life well lived has a lot to do with whether you've maintained or better understood your values. What is it that you really thought mattered in life? And it turns out, the older you get, the more you can strip away and realize didn't matter. The more things that absolutely didn't matter, and the more things that did. And I think that you reach a time where you really find out who you really are. And it's great to do that. You get to know yourself. I think that's what's so good, is if you have the time to appreciate the fact that you've got this time, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, time is the great gift. And to have it when you're ready to, we all don't like the word, but when you think you're phasing into the next detour and you've achieved your seniority, it's so great that you're able to do it. And so many people can't and never have the chance. So you make the most of it and you appreciate that you have it.
For me, I think it is, and again, both of Dick and Thelma said things that were on my mind, but there is this peace that comes with aging that hopefully is there when you're ready to take that detour. And that is a self-awareness. And that self-awareness, if you've allowed that to grow, brings you to a greater level of fulfillment in every part of your life. And it gives you probably the guts to try something completely different because you're truly aware of who you are and what value you have and what you're able to give to others, which is so important. And we don't take time probably to think about that when we're younger. I think that does come with age, but you know, you talk about a life well lived, and that's, and I'm feeling that now more at 70. I feel proud of myself and excited for me and what the future holds for me. And I think that that comes from being aware of now who I am and what my limitations are, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it, and what I'm able to give to the world. So with that comes this great sense of freedom and ability to move forward.
Dennis, anything you'd like to add?
I think of balance. I think of something that sometimes just, you know, maybe wasn't available to us in a sense that when we were all in our main careers and our main part of our life, you know, we might have created some balance, but we were always busy and everything. And now today we have this opportunity, and everybody's used the word, I love the word freedom. I love the reflection, the respecting the gift of time. And these are very powerful things for people to kind of self-reflect on and appreciate where you're at. So it is, it can make for a life very well lived. And I do think of balance. I do think you can have the opportunity to do different things and balance your life.
The last one I'll add is a sense of humor. So I think sometimes that can get forgotten, and it makes a huge difference, as we've heard on the discussion here today. We want to thank all of you for taking the time to join us for our 100th episode. It's been a blur, and we've learned a lot. It's been a key factor in our personal growth and development. And I know we get a lot of compliments from listeners who appreciate all of what you've shared in your previous appearances with us. And it's been a thrill to have you all together and talking amongst yourselves. And we look forward to continuing to have a dialogue, connect with you going forward.
Joe and Dennis, I'd like to add a congratulations to both of you on this 100th podcast. And even more importantly and more basic to that, the way you're communicating to this community of people, I just think it's really cool. And I'm so glad to have been part of it and so glad to have been part of this podcast with two very distinguished guests. And thank you very much.
I thank you too. And it's another thing for me to say, you know, having been a pioneer, it's so wonderful to have been the first. I hope I'm here for the 200th with the same people.
That would be fun. Congratulations on 100. It doesn't happen that often in the podcast world. So you should be very proud of yourselves.
So true.
Thank you all very much. Much appreciated.
Happy 100th podcast to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Great stuff. This was so much fun. Can't believe it's been 3-4 years we've been doing this since this fourth season. It's just a tremendous, what great guests today. Really appreciate it. Joe, what were your key takeaways?
Well, first of all, we've had the opportunity to talk to so many fascinating people, knowledgeable people who've taken the time to share their wisdom and experience with us and people who listen. So I think it's been a great learning experience and really privileged to have met and know many of them. So the things that jumped out today, first of all, what a great combination of people. We have had great conversations with them on the podcast before, but putting it together was interesting because what came out were some common denominators and really important lessons. When we first spoke to Thelma Reese back in our first official podcast, she made the comment that there are no role models for retirement, but I think we just listened to three. I think there's things we can learn from each. And a couple of things jumped out to me were first, Melissa Davies' point about self-awareness. That you really learn more about yourself over time. And then Thelma jumped in with, you really do get a sense to know what matters. And looking back as an 88-year-old, you get to see clearly what doesn't really matter. And then Dick talked about values. So all of them talk about values in some way, but really looking at retirement gives you the freedom to choose but you can make smart choices using your values. And Thelma's comment struck me about growth, but that's really what this is all about, is retirement's an opportunity to continue growth in some ways, accelerate growth, or explore personal growth in different ways in different arenas. And she made the comment that when you really stop learning, stop growing, that's when it becomes problematic. And I think that they all encourage trying new things, and I think that's the key to growth. And there were comments about the intergenerational aspect. A lot of times people fall into the trap of age segregation. They only want to live with or interact with, be surrounded by people their own age. And as she pointed out, that really can hamper learning growth. So that was a great conversation, personal growth, intergenerational aspects, focusing on value and freedom were the ones that jumped out to me today. How about you?
Then on that intergenerational comment, the quote that she got from somebody who said, "Don't believe everything you think," is really, you can learn a lot from just staying in touch with people from that different ages. So there's a lot of wisdom here from these people today and all of the guests that we've had. I'll just add a few things. Thelma at the beginning mentioned that time is changing today a lot and pace of change is accelerated. It's been an undefined role, but echo some of the things that you said, the importance of really understanding and appreciating the time that we're given and doing something with that time in a meaningful way. Melissa talked about importance of planning. I think she mentioned that a few times. And we see that people really, you know, they plan well on the financial side. They really need to take some time to think about this and plan on the non-financial side. Dick talked about the trial and error. That stuck with me about ease yourself into retirement. Trial and error is fine. And don't wait till you really retire to try and figure this out. And we've heard that from a lot of different guests, which is great perspectives. Finally, the stories they all told, the people they talked to was just so powerful to me. You know, we all sat around here. There's five of us talking about retirement. And it's not lost on the fact that there were a lot more people at the table today being represented and that their stories about retirement was so critically important and how it impacted these particular people's lives, our guests today, and a lot of the guests that we have, and even ourselves. Speak for myself. It has impacted me tremendously to have the benefit of speaking and listening to these 100 people. So stories are important. Stay connected with people. Get to know them, tell your own story, listen to their story. I think there's some great words of wisdom today, and it was a wonderful show and a happy 100th again.
So great, great point on planning. And one thing I noticed is planning is important, but it's not the whole thing. You've got to remain flexible. The old saying, man plans and God laughs. A lot of surprises in retirement and in that phase of life to be ready for them. But on the planning point, one thing I'm noticing in my work with clients is planning for retirement financially is a left-brainy kind of thing. It's very quantitative, it's very logical, it's very linear. And planning for what you're going to do with your time in retirement is right-brainy. It takes imagination. It takes a whole different approach. The financial side, you've got to manage risk. On the non-financial side, you've got to embrace risk and explore it, because that's what could lead to these new, trying new things, new, some different new pathways. So I think it takes different skill set and mindset. Sometimes people need some time to step out of their comfort zone, because they're really good in one way, but have a hard time with the other. Don't avoid it. Jump into the pool. The water's fine, and have time to experiment. But no, it's a different skill set. You're not going to plan in the same way, and you're going to be flexible anyway. Thank you for listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. We have greatly appreciated the 100 episodes we've been able to produce and the people that have shared their wisdom and experience with us. And our mission is to help people balance their financial planning with some attention to the other side. How are you going to invest your most precious asset of all, your time?
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.